Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. My co-host is Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. KeepBelieving.com is his website. Ray, I'm sitting here. My wife is babysitting the grandkids today. And so while we're talking on the air, she's shooting pictures to me on my phone. I don't know what we did without smartphones, but being able to see just immediately, just within seconds, I get to see my grandkids. It is it's awesome. You have grandkids, don't you?
We have six.
And
we get the WeChats and we get the the text messages and the pictures. And then yesterday we were coming home from somewhere, and our California kids, our California contingent, Eli is 5 years old, and he wanted to talk to Grandma and Grandpa. So they FaceTimed with us from California in the car on our way home. Impossible even 5 years ago. Just impossible. So
ain't technology grand?
It is. When it's grand, it is wonderful, right?
Yes, it is. That's right. And when it's not, it's awful.
So. That's right.
Hey, speaking of technology, keepbelieving.com, tell our listeners a little bit about Keep Believing Ministries and what's at that website.
Well, come see us on the internet at keepbelieving.com, all one word. We have a veritable plethora of, to quote, I think, Howard Cosell.
Howard Cosell.
That's right. It just means a whole bunch. You got a whole bunch of biblical resources, sermons, Bible studies, outlines, books, ebooks, videos, podcasts, all designed to help you understand the Bible, get to know the Lord, and have material that you can share with other people. As I've said before, Ed, we view ourselves as part of the Ordnance Depot of the body of Christ. We take the gospel ammo, the biblical ammo, and we pass it up to the frontline soldiers around the world. And, you know, the amazing thing is with technology now, it's not just in the U.S., but if you're in Finland or if you're in Bangladesh, we get a lot from Pakistan and people from India who come to our website. So the internet's amazing that way, and we invite people to come see us at KeepBelieving.com.
Cornucopia, a cornucopia of information there at KeepBelieving.com. Well, thank you, Ray, for letting our listeners know. All right, we're going to talk now. We're going to talk a little intelligent design here. If you're interested in those kinds of issues, the ongoing battle, evolution, creationism, intelligent design, we're going to talk right now to Douglas Axe, who is director of the Biologic Institute, a research organization launched by the Discovery Institute. And we're going to discuss Douglas's new book, Undeniable. Seems like there's a song in there. Undeniable.
There is one.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm not going to try to sing it, but there is
something.
One.
Anyway, I know it's, Jade just had a buzz in my ears, Unforgettable. I know. It's a joke, Jade. Undeniable. I just wanted to sing it. I'm just denied.
Sometimes you just feel like you got to break your song.
I just feel like I got to sing sometimes. And yes, Unforgettable. And Jade's going to tell me in a second who that was. I forget. But Undeniable, How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life is Designed. Douglas, first of all, sorry that you had to hear that. Second of all, welcome to the program.
Nat King Cole.
Nat King Cole. Oh, what a voice. There you go.
And
all right.
Natalie Cole did a great version after the passing of her father with her father.
Brilliant. Oh, wow. I remember my mom records back then. A lot of young people don't know what that is unless they're arrested. Then they have a record. They know what that is. But listening to records, Nat King Cole, what a great voice. But anyway, I digress. Douglas, let's talk a little bit about the issue of intelligent design, which is the focus of your book. But before we go any further, kind of define that for our listeners.
Intelligent design?
Yes, intelligent design.
Sure. It is it's an approach to this debate on origin that's risen to prominence in the last 20 years or so that is largely being put forward by believers, but not entirely believers. There are some agnostics and even an atheist or two that have joined the movement. Really what it's doing, that to contrast it with creationism, biblical creationism starts with the book of Genesis and has an interpretation of Genesis and then looks at how science can be reconciled with the book of Genesis. So often speaking against scientific consensus, but in order to reconcile the scientific data with the biblical interpretation. Intelligent design takes a different approach, starting just with the fundamentals of science, just the basic assumptions you need to do science, and then doing the science well. And again, it argues against the establishment, but not taking the book of Genesis to the establishment, but taking the science to the establishment and saying, you guys have got the science wrong, because the science has become so polluted by old ideas that get locked in. So it really is a scientific approach that's bold enough to confront the establishment on getting origins questions wrong.
Well, Douglas, say something about your own personal journey, because this book, folks, it's a fascinating read, because, Douglas, it contains your own personal journey, how you came to this. So, and it was a ride with some bumps along the way, and you include email exchange in the book that you had. And how did you come from where you started to the conviction that, no, there must be a designer. It must be true.
It was a long journey indeed, and a journey that did have some bumps that I write about in the book. I became a Christian in my teen years, was not raised in a Christian home. I was 14 when I became a Christian, and a few years later, found myself at UC Berkeley studying chemical engineering, taking physical science courses, not particularly interested in biology, but very much sensing the materialist atmosphere at Berkeley. Materialism being this idea that there's nothing but atoms and molecules. Matter and energy is all there is. It's the physical universe. Nothing else is real. And I didn't find that weakened my faith. I found that it kind of stirred something in me that I was determined to come back and answer the materialist line that was being taught from up front sometimes, professors up front teaching chemistry or thermodynamics and digressing and sort of preaching their materialist sermons. I didn't have anything specific that I intended to do, but I had that and started thinking about contradictions between materialism and free will and consciousness. And then as a graduate student at Caltech, I started to become very intrigued by the life sciences, took molecular biology and molecular genetics courses for the first time, and saw this fascinating connection between the engineering principles that I'd studied at Berkeley and what you see in life down at the subcellular level, down at the molecular level, these control regulatory circuits that are turning genes on and off, these molecular machines. And I became very fascinated at that point, first by the obvious design elements of the living world, all the way down to the molecules, but also at the prospect of doing science that would test whether these things could happen by accident. So the accidental, as soon as professor had taught about one of these amazing things, jaw-dropping things, they would say, this is probably how it evolved, or they would give an evolutionary explanation, which I didn't find at all compelling. I didn't argue with professors at the time, but I was quietly thinking someone should do the work that would test this to decide for sure whether this can happen by accident or not. And that set me off on a course taking a postdoc at Cambridge University and continuing on from there to actually frame the problem in a way where you could get data and come up with a conclusion as to whether these things could evolve or not. Now, over a period of 25 years, that work has been done. It's been published in the peer-reviewed science journals, and I consider the argument to have been won by the design position. And yet here we are with Darwinism still being the orthodox explanation of life that's taught in the textbooks, taught to our kids in school, and nothing seems to shift. And that's when I had an opportunity to write a book that materialized, landed on my lap as a blessing a few years ago, and I thought, what would be the best book to write? And I decided it would be a book that would take this argument away from the technical sphere and put it right on the table where everyone can understand it and grasp it. The idea being that the more people who get this and understand that design really is the correct way to view life and accidental causes could never invent life, the more people who get that, the more the chances are that there will be momentum that will force the Academy to shift.
Douglas, let me ask you this. How do you answer Darwinists, evolutionists, how they sometimes like and don't like, you know, certain terms, but how do you respond to them when, because I'm always fascinated in this issue of intelligent design, when you bring up something like the Goldilocks zone, and I'm talking as a total layperson, so feel free to correct where necessary. But I think it's the idea that planets are in a perfect position to allow for life. But what Darwinists will say is that where Douglas acts is looking and seeing design, that's simply a manifestation of our ability to see patterns, and that all you're doing is assigning significance where significance doesn't really exist. Have you heard? I'm sure you've heard that argument. How do you respond to that?
Well, the subtitle, so my book is titled Undeniable, and then the subtitle is How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life is Designed. And it, as you know, if you've read the book, this design intuition is really the thread that runs through the book. I kind of frame it around this intuition. The intuition isn't the argument. I make an argument that shows that the intuition is correct. So in a way, when people are saying, we jump to this because we seem to be hardwired to see design, I think that's true, and we think in terms of design. But to dismiss the intuition just because it's an intuition is false. You have to look underneath the intuition and decide whether there are scientific principles that are actually supporting the conclusion that we jump to. So that's what the book does. It doesn't claim that an intuition is an argument. And I draw on other people's work to say that we all do have this design intuition. From an early age, when we look at living things, we know that they were designed by a godlike designer. That's even been conceded that even the children of atheists, even children who've been brought up in atheist families, see this when they're young, 5 years old. We all have that intuition. The question is it correct or not? And I spend a good chunk of the book showing in a way that I hope non-technical readers will follow that, in fact, this design intuition is correct, and it's actually scientific in nature. There's a scientific footing for it.
We're talking with Douglas Axe. He is the author of the brand new book, Undeniable, How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life is Designed. You've alluded earlier in the interview, and in the book you talk about it openly, the challenge you faced as a student, doctoral student, postdoctoral, I mean, has cost you some relationships and some friendships because of the stand you've taken. Let me say something about how difficult is it today for someone how difficult is it within the academy, if you're a student, to question the prevailing scientific orthodoxy? Obviously, we're thinking about creation. We're thinking about design. Is it extremely difficult? How do you even survive as a student in a field swimming against such an overwhelming tide?
It's hazardous, let's put it that way. Anyone can do it, but they will very likely suffer some consequences for doing it. So I would not advise students who are critical of the neo-Darwinian orthodoxy to quarrel with their teachers and professors, because I think it's important for students to get their credentials, get through their training, and then find a position where they can speak the truth with boldness. And you know, it's not even the case that if you become a professor and you get tenure at a research university, you might think that with tenure, you can't be fired and so you can say what you want. But the fact is, you can be punished even if you're a tenured professor at a research university. So it's a very, it's a poisoned environment. And I dialogue with the reader quite a bit on what I think has gone wrong and just the human state of the scientific enterprise. I think we can sometimes entertain thoughts that science rises above this, that it's not tainted by political thinking or groupthink or bullying or peer pressure. But the fact is, all those human things are common to every human enterprise, and they're abundantly present in the scientific enterprise.
So if you could kind of guesstimate, because the way we hear it in the lay world, who, you know, people like me, I'm not very scientifically, you know, adept. I don't have, you know, I'm more interested in history. My mind doesn't seem to work well in terms of math and science. We hear all the time, this is settled. I've already mentioned that. But if you were able to kind of guesstimate, what percentage would you put on the scientific community? Obviously, this may be anecdotal, but of the number of scientists who go, I think that's the Darwinian explanation, you know, as opposed to intelligent design, is weak, but I just don't want to say anything. I mean, can you guess? Just give us what you've experienced.
It's a fascinating question. I don't have data on that, although I only have anecdotal data in that I have observed that you can have scientists who have not in any way publicly supported the design position. In private conversations, you get a much more respectful tone. It's that these scientists know that if they go back to their job and they publicly say, you know, I think this design idea needs to be given serious consideration, they get pounced upon. They know that they'll get punished for saying it. So I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure that the proportion of life scientists who are at least open to the design interpretation is much higher than you would suspect from the official voices of science, because no one can speak that way without getting punished.
Let me ask you about your subtitle, because it's fascinating, and you've alluded to it already. Undeniable how biology confirms our intuition that life is designed. You're really talking about a universal intuition. What is that universal intuition, and where does it come from?
Yeah, I call this the universal design intuition, and I didn't make this up. The other people have observed it. I gave it that term. It's this immediate idea. When I give talks, I show a picture of an origami crane. Okay, so an origami crane folded out of paper, sitting on a table. A child who's maybe never done origami or seen this before, as soon as they see that sitting on the table, they know that someone folded it. They know that paper doesn't accidentally take the shape of an animal. And so they ask themselves, who did this? How do you do it? Can I do it? Show me how to do it. So I think that way of thinking emerges in us from a very early age, 2, 3. We're looking at things around us. We recognize the things that other people did, maybe a sister or brother, mommy or daddy, and we want to do those things. So we're oriented in this way of thinking about what are the tasks that you need to know how to do in order to do them, and I want to know how to do those. I want to prove that I can do those. Now, when you move from the origami crane to the real crane, you know, skimming the water as it flies over the water, that same intuition kicks in instantly. Someone did that. And you don't say, I want to make one of those, but you say, that didn't happen by accident. And you think someone had to have made that. That's the universal design intuition. And it's widely recognized that we all have it at an early age. And in fact, studies have shown that even life scientists who've had it kind of beaten out of them, they still have this appeal to design and purpose when they look at life or the inner workings of life. It's very hard to remove it. Francis Crick said something to the effect of, biologists have to constantly remind themselves that the things we're studying evolved and were not designed. So even someone in his 70s who's had such a wonderful scientific career looking at the inner workings of life has to constantly remind himself and others, we have to tell ourselves that these things evolved, they weren't designed. That's the design intuition.
You know, the amount of hostility that is directed towards folks like you, obviously creationists as well, but intelligent design folks. Just as an aside, have you checked out the – because I checked out the Biologic Institute online. I'd heard of the Discovery Institute, and so I went – Wikipedia is always kind of the first one that pops up. That is about as hostile and one-sided a presentation of an organization as I've ever seen. Have you seen it? I mean, it's you know, totally dismissive of the Biologic Institute, and I don't know if you guys even know that's out there.
I tend not to. You know, Wikipedia has its strong points, but clearly anything that's the least bit controversial is not a reliable source. I've never looked at that page, to be honest.
Okay.
And I don't look at the Wikipedia page on me.
I know, and true scholars don't. I understand that, and college professors, they don't like it. It's a total aside. I just thought nobody's going to know the truth about who you guys are from that page. Anyway, we are Douglas. We are out of time. This is a wonderful book. It's very accessible, even to scientific nitwits like me. And I think people will get a lot out of it. It will boost their faith, and I think will undergird that intuition that they have. So well done. The name of the book is Undeniable: How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life Is Designed. Our guest has been Douglas Axe, who's director of the Biologic Institute, a research organization that was launched by the Discovery Institute. Douglas, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you. Can I just say people can go to undeniabledesign.com for more information on the book?
Absolutely. Any other websites? Do you speak at churches or conferences? You have a website?
I do, and that's starting to pick up. So I'll be talking more about the book starting right away.
Same website?
There's not information about speaking there, but I think there's contact information there.
Okay.
Where you can make inquiries.
All right, good. Thank you so much, Douglas. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Douglas Axe has been our guest with the Biologic Institute. He's written a book titled Undeniable: How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life Is Designed. You know, Ray, I like stuff like this. It's hard for me to sift through. This was a pretty readable book.
Right.
It's hard for me to sift through a lot of science, even with the creationist versus evolutionist. I got a lot of books on it, and you know, Henry Morris, I read through that whole thing.
Sure.
It's just hard for me to sift through when people are talking about carbon-14 dating from a scientific perspective to say, well, this side's right and this side's wrong. That's very difficult for me. But this was a pretty good, you know, read in terms of helping the layperson at least get a loose grasp on the concepts.
Well, I love that, you know, the idea of the intuition.
Yeah.
We would say from a, you know, biblical point of view, this is the image of God.
Right.
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 That you are made in the image of God. So, you know, you came from somewhere, even if you can't figure all the details out, it's a wonderful book confirming the intuition that's placed there by God is true. The heavens still declare the glory
Amen.
Of God, and
Amen.
The firmament showeth forth his handiwork.
Man, great. Good way to end the program. Folks, Ed Vitagliano, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries, keepbelieving.com. You can find out more from Ray Pritchard. But we are done for another edition of today's issues. Tomorrow is Trivia Friday, and we'll have a blast tomorrow. More great programming on the American Family Radio Network. Stick around, you'll be blessed. We'll see you tomorrow.